but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I'm excited to have our next guest on, Pro Football Hall of Famer Warren Moon. You know, you may remember him as a 9-time Pro Bowler. You may remember him as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, Grey Cup MVP twice, won 5 Grey Cup championships. You may even remember him from the University of Washington. We got to talk a little bit about the Pac-12, don't we? But when I think about Warren Moon, I think about resilience. College recruiters who told him, hey, we want you to switch from quarterback to another position. He said no. He went to West LA Community College for a year. Then Don James gave him a chance to play quarterback. He won what was then a Pac-8 title at Washington. And people forget, that interrupted a decade plus of USC and UCLA dominating. Conference Player of the Year, Rose Bowl victory over Michigan. Warren Moon was the most outstanding player of that game. And then not picked in the 1978 NFL Draft. Goes to Canada. Goes to play for the Edmonton Eskimos. Plays for Hugh Campbell there. Played quarterback. Then finally gets to the NFL. He is the only player who's in both the Pro Football and Canadian Hall of Fame. He's a pioneer. He's resilient, though. And I think that's the thing I would start with. Like, we're all trying to teach our kids resilience. Gather around. Warren Moon joining us. How are you, man?
I'm great, John. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. When I recount all of that stuff, you know, you go back to high school, you go back to community college. That feel like a while ago?
You know, your career really flies by pretty fast when you're playing, but now I've had a chance to sit back and reflect and look at it. And yeah, it was a long time ago, but I still remember a lot of those things very vividly, and the things that continue to keep motivating me today, and it's one of the reasons why I'm so proud of my career when I look around the NFL right now and see all the African-American quarterbacks who are thriving right now, that I played a small part in making that happen.
Yeah, I think it's you played a big part in showing the way and you know, paving the way. What did it feel like back then to you? Because these guys today, you know, it's not a question for Cam Ward. It's not a question for Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels. It's, you know, everybody knows that these guys can play and should be playing, but didn't feel that way to you probably when you go undrafted after having a great college career.
Yeah, not at the time it really didn't. I felt you know, I was hurt by it. I felt like I had put myself in a position to at least get a chance to show what I could do at the next level, and that wasn't going to be allowed to me by most teams. So I had to go with my next best option, which was the Canadian Football League, and they gave me an opportunity to play quarterback, and I was going to go wherever somebody was going to let me play quarterback, or I was just going to give up the game and go to law school. So I'm glad that Edmonton came along when they did, and I decided to go up there and make the most of my career there. Thought about even staying there my whole career because I enjoyed it so much and we were winning so much. But in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, you know, am I good enough to play with these guys down in the National Football League? Because people kept telling me I couldn't. So that was the burning desire for me to come back and play in the NFL, was just to see if I was good enough to play on that level.
When did you know? When, you know, does it happen in training camp? Does it happen in your first season in the NFL? When do you go, I belong here?
Well, I knew I could compete. And once you get out in practice and you see the guys are basically the same as guys you've already played against, there's no question things were different because the style of play is different up in Canada. The field's wider, the field's longer, 12 guys as opposed to 11 guys. So there was a lot of different things I had to adjust back to, which wasn't very hard. But, you know, you see the speed of the game. It's a little bit different when you come back down here. The windows that you throw the football to, you have to be, you know, much more accurate with the football because you don't have the bigger windows with the wider field. So those are things I adjusted to. But, yeah, I felt like I could play right away when I came back after my first training camp.
You see guys that are going in this draft, high in this draft. Cam Ward, obviously you were there as he's introduced to the media in Tennessee. You walk in, you know, your jersey's retired, but, you know, you present him with the number one jersey. How did that feel to you to kind of pass the torch a little bit this last week?
You know, because of the young man that he is, that's what made it okay with me to do it. You know, I love his background. You talk about resiliency. He's another guy that was very resilient in his career coming up to this point. So it reminded me a lot of my journey. And, you know, he's very close with his parents. They have a really great relationship. They've been in his life, you know, all the way through his career. He has a longtime girlfriend. So he's very well grounded. He's very humble. And that's something that I like to see in young guys, especially coming out of college as big stars, that they're humble when they come into the next level, because you're going to get humbled by the NFL because there's some really great players, and these guys are experienced and they know what they're doing. So I think I like that he has all that in place already. And then the fact that he's taken a number that the Tennessee Titans have never had worn, and he's going to take that number and create his own legacy. I wore the Houston Oilers jersey, number one, and he's going to get a chance to wear the Tennessee Titans number one for the first time and make his own legacy out of it. Hopefully it's a very successful journey for him in the National Football League.
People always talk about, you know, does your game translate? Warren, I think if we put you in an offense right now, your skill set was made for this era, even though you made hay in your era. How much fun would it be for you to play right now with the rules the way they are and receivers running free?
I just love the fact that they protect the quarterback better than they ever have before, you know? If I was getting protected like that during the days when I was playing, I was throwing the balls, you know, anywhere from 550 to 600 times a season in a 16-game season. And I took a lot of hits during those times, hits that they don't allow anymore. So that part of it would be fine for me. And I feel like the way I played the game kind of helped change the way you see the game being played now. It's a more wide-open game. When we were in the run and shoot in Houston, you know, we were a four wide out, spread it out, and throw it all over the place. And that's what you see teams doing now. They do it more from the drop back and the shotgun, but they're still doing the same route concepts and everything that we did back in the day. So I would fit right in today, believe me.
Well, Portland State fans will know that Mouse Davis was running that stuff here. And Jerry Glanville, even when he came back, he would often refer to you and say, okay, this is what we were trying to do in Houston. And how important is that fit where you get a coach, a scheme, a player in the NFL to make that line up for a player to have real success?
Well, I think that's the key to any quarterback having success is you have to assess what his strengths and weaknesses are, and then that's how you design your offense. You don't make a quarterback come in and do something that he's not capable of doing. And a lot of coaches have done that in the past. I think they're doing that a lot better now as far as seeing what these kids are successful with in college and implementing those things into their offense when they get to the National Football League. So there's a lot of similarities between the two. The learning curve isn't that hard, and you start to see these guys have more success early because they're doing something that's second nature to them. So that's one of one of the biggest improvements I've seen in offensive football in the NFL in the last, say, 10, 15 years, is they're really allowing these kids to come in and do what they do best and not forcing them, like, you know, taking a round hole, putting a square peg into a round hole. They're doing things that they've done before and they feel comfortable doing them.
Pro Football Hall of Famer Warren Moon is our guest. You mentioned, you know, how many times you went back to pass and you got hit. Is there a hit that stays with you all these years from a defensive tackle or somebody who blitzed off the corner?
Yeah, those are the big ones, the ones that come off the edge. When, especially in the run and shoot, we didn't have a tight end, so both corners were very tight, you know, coming off the tackles. And I got blitzed a lot because that was one of the ways they thought they could beat the offense, was put as much pressure on the quarterback as you could. So I took some really big hits, and probably the biggest one I took was from a guy named Carlos Jenkins. He was a linebacker with the Minnesota Vikings, and he hit me really good in my sternum. And I mean, there's times today I can still feel that hit in there. You know, if I get a massage or something and somebody rubs it the wrong way, you still feel it. But the ball, you know, I went one way and the ball went the other way. They picked it up and ran for a touchdown, and I laid there until I could, you know, regain my senses again. But yeah, that was one of those hits that you remember, because he came scot-free off the blind side, and as soon as I turned back to throw the ball, boom, there he was, helmet right in my chest.
The Cam Ward, you're right about Cam. We've had him on this show a number of times when he was at Washington State. I think his mom's a school teacher. You know, he you know, just struck me as a guy who had a lot of structure growing up, and you know, he approaches things the right way. We've also had Shedeur Sanders on the show, and the interview wasn't great, and I didn't feel like he wanted to be here, and that's fine if he didn't want to be here. But what do you think Shedeur dropped in the draft? Because people have had to ask you, what happened to Shedeur? What do you think happened?
You know, first off, he wasn't one of those generational-type quarterbacks, right? You know, he wasn't like a John Elway coming out, or a Andrew Luck, or even Caleb in last year's draft. You know, these are guys that everybody thought would be generational-type players. So they could get away with a lot of things others couldn't. And maybe if they didn't want to work out for somebody, they didn't have to. Or if they didn't want to, you know, throw at the combine, they didn't have to. But I thought with Shedeur, he should have done everything that he was asked. You know, he should have been a little bit more humble about the process. And I think he's admitted to that he didn't handle the pre-draft process probably the way he should have. He turned down some interviews. He wasn't good in some interviews. He didn't throw the ball at the combine. He didn't play in the Senior Bowl. A lot of things he could have done to really show what he could do and showcase his skills. And I think once teams were kind of turned off by that and didn't really get a good feel for him, that's when he started to drop in the draft. So I feel bad for the kid, because I think he's much better than a fifth-round draft pick.
Yeah.
But he still has a chance to go into a training camp and show what he can do, and he can put his head down and just grind in training camp. And who knows, he could end up being the starter at Cleveland. You never know. So it's unfortunate these things happen, but sometimes it's a blessing in disguise if you use it the right way.
How did you feel as the Pac-12 was splintering here just, you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and schools were going different directions? You're a guy who grew up in that conference and made a name for yourself there.
Yeah, I hated it, but I also understood it was about money. You know, when these athletic programs need money to keep them going, and you've got this new age of NIL and transfer portal, and you've got to go what's going to be best for, I guess, your university athletic department. So I'm a big believer in the traditions of the rivalry games and all those different things, and I knew those would eventually go away once the Pac-12 was dismantled. But I understood the reason why, and I'm hoping that a Pac-12, you know, comes back, and I think there's a chance for that to happen. It just won't be the same teams. But, yeah, college football is totally different now, and hopefully they get somebody that will run the whole thing as a commissioner or a czar or something like that,
yeah,
to kind of bring everything under one umbrella and get some regulations and things in place. Because right now it's pretty much the Wild Wild West. Guys are moving all over the place. They're spending money like crazy. I'm all for kids being paid while they're in college, but that doesn't mean you have to break the bank and compete with everybody for the money. So that's not why the rule was intended. It was intended for these kids to have money in their pocket while they're in college. Well, from what the numbers that I've seen, they have a lot of money in their pockets.
I worry about development, because, you know, you go to community college and then you go to Washington and you got a chance to grow in college. And I worry that, you know, guys that are getting in the portal and not spending maybe more than a season or two at a college don't get a chance to sit with a coordinator and a coaching staff and really grow. And do you think that inhibits growth of QBs, or has the game changed so much that these guys can get the development, you know, in their own time? Or how do you view that?
Well, if you're smart about it, depending on where you're transferring to, you'll pick a place where you're going to have a chance to be developed. The problem I have with this whole thing is it doesn't create competition anymore. Everybody wants the easy route. It's like, if I'm not starting here, I'm going to go there. Or if I'm starting here and somebody offers me more money because I had a great year, then I'm going to leave and go somewhere else. So those are the things that bother me more than anything else, is that the money is really tempting these kids to do probably the bad thing. And then there's not a whole lot of hunger anymore, because I know when I was playing college football, I was like wanting to go to the next level so I could make money as a pro. Well, now these kids are making more money than some of the pro players, so there's not a big hunger for them to even leave college. So the competition part of it really bothers me too. So, they really need to get things a little bit more organized with this NIL transfer portal deal, and I think once they do, it can be a great system for young players. But you shouldn't just be able to just up and leave every time you're being going to be asked to be a backup. What happened to competition and competing for a job?
Yeah, and I think I'll even go back to your high school. You go to Alexander Hamilton High School in Los Angeles, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you really didn't play until you were a junior and you're a starter, and then your senior season was your big year. I see high school kids now, if they go to a high school and they don't play by the time year and a half in, they're looking for a new high school.
Yeah, they really are. And when you get to the NFL, all that stops. There's no moving around. It's not like when you get to the NFL and you get drafted or you sign as a free agent. If you're not playing, I can't say, I'm going to pick up my shoes and go to the next team. Well, that stuff ends. So you start to create a false sense of awareness when you start doing all this jumping around when you're in high school and college, because if you ever think about going to the pros, and the pros watch these kids who transfer all over the place too. That's something that's in the back of their minds all the time. How competitive is this young guy if he's always moving around to different places? So that might hurt your opportunity, but when you get to the NFL, when you sign a contract, you're there until they're ready to get rid of you, and that's kind of the way it is, and you better get used to that.
We always will talk about QBs, and we'll talk about their arm, and we'll talk about their feet, but I want you to maybe help us with some of the stuff that you could get if you got a chance to sit down with a high school or a college prospect who was looking at the NFL, and you want to talk to them about their reads or audibles or pass protection. Could you maybe dive a little bit into the cerebral part of that? If you got a chance to sit down with a college QB, it was a high draft pick, and you're trying to decide, can this guy play in the NFL? What are you looking to learn as you talk with him?
Well, I'm seeing how fast he processes information. It's hard for me to go in, or any quarterback to go in and know what a particular team's reads are on a certain play or whatever, because everybody has their own progression. But we can also talk about the basics. We can talk about what you're looking for on certain coverages, who's the guy you're going to key on this particular coverage, what happens if he goes here, what happens if he moves there. A lot of times you're reading safeties. They pretty much tell you what coverages are going to be by rotation and where they line up and things like that. And some teams disguise things more than others. So film study is so important to a young quarterback, or even a veteran quarterback, to try and get a tip on what a defense might be doing before it happens, because if you know what the defense is going to do before it happens, you have a big advantage in making a play be successful or knowing that you need to change that play. So those would be the things I will be looking for when I sit down with the quarterback: how quickly he processes things, how quickly he sees what he thinks a defense might be doing on a play based off of his pre-snap look and things like that.
Warren Moon is with us, Pro Football Hall of Famer. Hall of Famer also in the Canadian Football League, 70,000 passing yards between those two leagues. That's staggering, staggering figure there. I want to go back to your childhood. Your dad was a laborer. He died when you were young. I think you were 7. Your mom was a nurse. I have to think the resilience you built came from that household, and you had 6 sisters. You're in the middle of that. How did you get that resilience? Did it come from that household?
Yeah, it came from my mom, basically, because when my dad died, I was 7, and I was just starting to understand, what that was all about. And then kind of watching the way my mother, she really took just a grip of our household and made it work by going back to school, becoming a nurse. She wasn't a nurse at the time when he passed, so she went back to night school. along with working during the day, and then she became a nurse and started working double shifts doing that. I just watched how she made everything happen for us. She still provided for us as far as hot meals, as far as clean clothes, as far as having hot meals on the table, and everything she did. Our house was immaculate. We had, you know, a really small house, but everything had a place for it, and it was just amazing how she kept our family going, and I really watched all of that happen, and that's, I think, where my resiliency came from, that if my mother can go through what she had to go through and make it for us and sacrifice for us, then I should be able to do the same thing. And a part of my motivation was to one day be able to, you know, provide for her, buy her a new home, make sure she didn't have to work anymore and all those things. And that was a motivation for me to make it to the next level as much as I wanted to make it for myself. So, yeah, that's where a lot of that came from, just watching her and just feeding off of the way she led our household.
What was it like to have six sisters?
Boy, oh boy, tell me about it. I had to get in the bathroom very early in the morning or I wouldn't have got in there for a while, I'll tell you that.
I love that.
But, you know, it was great having, you know, sisters. I learned so much as far as how to take care of myself, as far as, you know, the things that most women are the ones that do around the house, whether it's cleaning, whether it's cooking, whether it's sewing, whether it's ironing. I did all those things when I was a young kid, and once I got on my own, I could take care of myself very well. And so those are the things I learned from being around a lot of women. Don't ask me to change oil on my car or change spark plugs or anything like that because I have no clue. But anything to do around the house, I'm very good at.
Hamilton High School, 1974, you graduate in L.A. You had James Lofton as a classmate. Were you aware at the time, did everybody go, hey, we have two future Hall of Famers here?
Isn't that amazing that two guys on the same Pop Warner football team, one being a defensive end, which is what James was. This is when we were 11, 12 years old, and I was an outside linebacker, believe it or not. And we both end up being in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Before that, we were both all-city quarterbacks. You know, he went to Washington High School. I went to Hamilton High School, and he goes off to Stanford. They switch him to wide receiver. He makes the change. I wasn't going to make the change. I wanted to play quarterback, so that's why I decided to go to a junior college for a year. And we ended up playing against each other in the Pac-12 because he was at Stanford. Well, I was in the Pac-8 at that time. And then we played against each other in the NFL, and now we're in the Pro Football Hall of Fame together and still really good friends. So, yeah, it was quite a journey for both of us, but it ended up pretty well.
Now, when they're telling you to switch positions, were you close to doing it, or were you adamant, or was your mom saying, no, don't do this, or what was that decision like?
No, I was adamant that I was only going to play quarterback, and I was just going to go wherever they were going to let me. It wasn't like no school was recruiting me at quarterbacks, but it was, you know, smaller schools, a Cal Poly Pomona. It was some, you know, those types of schools were going to let me play quarterback, or schools that were running the wishbone or running the option, which is not what I was. You know, I was a throwing quarterback, so I actually had committed to Arizona State, and then they signed with, they thought were the two top quarterbacks in the country, and they told me they were going to switch my position. So I decommitted from Arizona State and went to Hamilton. I mean, went to West LA Junior College to try and see if I could get better offers. And finally, that's when the University of Washington and some other schools started recruiting me because I had I was All-State and State Player of the Year in the junior college ranks, and I started to get a little bit more attention.
All right, so if you're playing in today's game, you're a $55 million guy. I mean, I know old timers will always look back. In your era, they were looking back at what you were making, going, "We didn't make that money." Do you make of what the QBs are getting now?
I think it's great, but it's just astronomical to me. The amount of money that these guys are making, and they deserve it. You know, the game is generating that type of revenue. I mean, these TV contracts are in the billions and billions of dollars. The players definitely deserve their percentage of that, and they're getting it. And I'm happy for them. Only thing I want them to understand is remember how it got to this point. Mm-hmm. How many guys sacrificed back in the day to get it to this point, whether it was, you know, playing the game the way they have, helping promote the game, picketing during strikes to try and get free agency, all the different things that we struck for. There was a lot that went into that, and I just want these guys to appreciate that because that's why they're in the position they are right now.
Do you think they get it?
A lot of them do, because I get calls from a lot of them where I see different ones out, but there's a lot of them that don't really understand as well, and they need to learn the history of the game. And I think that's something that the league could do a better job of making sure these guys get some type of manuscript or something that shows them the history of the game and make them read it, make them test them on it, whatever it might be, to make sure they know what this game is all about. Because I remember when I was a young kid, growing up, I used to read the, what was it called? I can't think of the name of the book, but it was a sports encyclopedia of every sport. And I read all. I read about
sports
all
almanac.
The different sports. The sports almanac. Yeah, all of that.
I remember that.
And I knew about all the greats, you know, the Bronco Nagurskis, all those different people that played well before me. And I learned the history of the game and all the different sports. So I think young kids can do a better job of that, especially if they've got, you know, they've got phones and Google's right there, and all the information is right there for them if they want to put in the time. But there's a lot of kids today that only think about what's going on today and what's going to happen tomorrow, and could care less about what happened a year ago.
1989, prior to the 1989 season, you sign a 5-year, $10 million contract extension. It made you the highest paid player in the NFL at that time. What did that feel like? Because that validation, you know, it's not all about money, but that was a validating moment for a guy who wasn't drafted 11 years earlier.
Yeah. Again, a lot of the things that happened to me throughout my career, it just really made me proud that I stuck to it and didn't give up on what I believed in. I didn't give up on what I'm believing in myself. And I just continued to keep working hard, and great things came to me. So when I tell my story about my journey, those are the things I talk about, the different milestones I was able to hit because I didn't give up on myself, and that other young people have the opportunity to do the same thing as long as they're willing to work hard, if they have hopefully somebody behind them, because I had a family that was behind me, you know, encouraging me. And there were a lot of days when I felt like maybe it wasn't going to happen for me, but I kept pushing, and it finally got there. So, I'm proud of the career I had. My only regret is not winning a Super Bowl title as a quarterback. But other than that, I did so many other things that I thought I would never do. So my career was really good.
Let me, before I let you go here, I was talking in hour one of this show, you know, asking our listeners, who's the greatest you ever saw? Warren Moon, who's the best football player you ever saw?
Man, there was just too many during my era.
give me a handful.
On the defensive side of the ball. You know, you're talking about a guy like Reggie White. I thought he was one of the most dominating defensive linemen that I played against. Lawrence Taylor, the way he could dominate the game, and I played against all these guys, and Bruce Smith. Those three guys were just difference makers. You know, that you had to worry about where they lined up every play. You had to make sure your line was sliding that way, or you had somebody chipping on that side or something, and it made their other players better because you were putting so much focus on them. So those are three guys that I always talk about as three of the better players that I played against, because they changed the way you had to play your offense when you played against those three guys on defense.
What was Lawrence always talking on the other side? I used to watch those NFL films videos, and he was always chattering.
You know, I played against him twice, and he didn't chatter that much, but he did talk. You know, I'm sure he talked a little bit more, maybe the tight ends who were over him or tackles that were over him, but I never heard him talk very much to me. But what an intimidating player he was, and again, he was one of those guys that just made the other players around him better because of all the focus that was put on him.
Yep. Warren Moon, I appreciate you. Thank you for what you did as a player and what you're doing now, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Hey, I appreciate it. Good to talk to you, and look forward to talking to you the next time.
All right, there he goes. Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Warren Moon. Really, I think it's just such a testament to resilience when you're told over and over again, you can't do this, you should play another position, you're not good enough, we're not drafting you. Think about how backwards that was in 1978, that a guy that would throw for 70,000 yards was told by the 28 NFL teams in 1978, that, you know, we don't have any room for you. We can't play you. You're not good enough. You're going to have to go to Edmonton. And the fact that he went to Edmonton, won 5 straight Grey Cups, and then the NFL went, eh, okay, you can come back. You're probably good enough. What a fun interview with Warren Moon. I want you to leave it here. You got the BFT.